This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Welcome to the Trumpet's weekly review of all the important news. I'm Joel Hilliker, and with me is our panel here in the studio. We have Jeremiah Jacques.
Hi there.
And Andrew Miller.
Hello.
From our office in Britain, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Nachtigall.
Hi.
Well, it seems most of today's program, we're going to be looking at the devastating effects of the policies enacted by the Joe Biden administration in America, both domestically and abroad. We'll see how America is lifting sanctions on Iranian energy firms, how the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is now ready to pump oil from Russia to Germany, how China is taking the opportunity to move into Afghanistan as America moves out, although that was also taking place under Donald Trump, and how the southern border of the U.S. is flooding with illegal immigrants from all over the world. But we'll start by looking at two important alliances that President Trump built up and that the Biden team is destroying, those with Britain and Israel. We'll start by looking at what is happening to America's relationship with Britain, and for this, we'll go to Richard.
Yes, so right now, as we speak, the UK, we're hosting the G7 meeting. It's a big deal, big summit. They're hosting it in Cornwall, dominating the newspapers. And one of the biggest features of this G7 summit was that it was going to be the first time that British Prime Minister Boris Johnson would meet with the US President Joe Biden, at least in their kind of capacities as national leaders. So a new beginning, an important beginning, an important relationship. And so much about this meeting had kind of been planned and choreographed to show this, to showcase a really close bond between these two men. Boris Johnson has pushed really hard on environmental issues, and a big part of it is, I think, he sees this as a way to kind of draw close to Joe Biden, that the environment and green policies are a big thing for him. And so by supporting that, he can draw close to this to him. There was a new Atlantic Charter released by the two leaders today or coming out today, where, you know, just like Winston Churchill and Franklin D. Roosevelt signed this Atlantic Charter of, this is the common purpose of these two allies in the world at the start of World War II. Well, Boris Johnson and Joe Biden were going to sign this new charter, kind of reaffirming the relationship between Britain and America as the world moves forwards from the COVID pandemic and these two nations working hand in hand. So much planned for this weekend, for today, that was meant to really put the showcase on the unity between these two countries and to really highlight how close they were. And the day before the whole thing really got started, it just got torpedoed by the Biden administration, where the Biden administration had the U.S. officials in London issue an extraordinary rebuke to Boris Johnson and to the British government. There isn't currently, I don't believe, a U.S. ambassador to the Court of St. James here in London. Instead, that because that hasn't been appointed, this all falls to a slightly more junior level level position. But this representative issued a demarche, a formal diplomatic reprimand to Boris Johnson. And this was over what's going on in Northern Ireland, where the EU is trying to kind of use Brexit to pry Northern Ireland away from the UK. And Boris or Joe Biden very strongly took the EU side and issued this demarche. The Times said it was a move without recent precedent. It called it a formal diplomatic reprimand seldom exchanged between allies. So, you know, unprecedented rebuke. And so instead of having the unity between these two nations on display, instead we have unprecedented division.
Now, the contrast between what you saw this week with the Biden administration and Britain couldn't be starker than what Britain was enjoying with President Trump in office. But this really is a return to precisely what we saw under the Obama administration, which was also famously hostile to Britain. Talk to us about just the difference that we're seeing and how this really is a return to what we were seeing before.
Right. Especially when it comes to Brexit, you had the Obama administration was very much anti-Brexit, against Britain leaving the European Union. He very famously said, you know, Britain, if you leave the EU, you're going to be at the back of the queue when it comes to with a trade deal with America. Hillary Clinton was over here lecturing Britain on how he shouldn't leave the European Union. They're basically campaigning on behalf of the EU. We had a very big switch with President Donald Trump, who was very much pro-Brexit, celebrated Brexit, was able on that basis to form a pretty close relationship with Boris Johnson. You saw this in a whole load of other different symbolic gestures as well. You know, very famously, Mr. Obama, pretty soon after he got into office, he got rid of the bust of Winston Churchill. And I think that's an interesting, you know, that's a step that probably takes on more significance now than it did back in 2008. You know, we're used to statues coming down. This, in some ways, was the first time somebody had kind of kicked out Winston Churchill, but saying, oh, he's problematic. He kind of got a whole lot of that started. He talked often expressing contempt for the British Empire. There were things that he did that were interpreted as showing a lack of respect to the British Prime Minister, to the Queen. You had a State Department official saying there's nothing special about Britain. You're just the same as another 190 countries in the world. You had a complete flip with Donald Trump. You know, the Churchill bust was brought back. All of those warm rhetorics. And then once again, when Joe Biden came back in again, one of his first actions was to kick Churchill back out again. So a very seesaw relationship there.
Now, the fact that Donald Trump had been so pro-Britain really did give them somewhat of a lifeline as they were leaving Europe, and he was trying to show that this is a really strong alternative to the trade relationships that they enjoyed with Europe. A separation, a split between Britain and America really is something that we expect based on the prophecies of the Bible. Talk about that.
Yeah, this is something that Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory really drew attention to in the latest Trumpet print edition. The article's called The Real Rift Caused by the Royal Couple. But what I thought was really remarkable about this piece is, it's about Harry and Meghan and some of the palaver around that. But he really focuses on one of the important parts of the Harry and Meghan story is the growing divide between Britain and America. You know, he really zeroed in on this divide as something very important to watch. And he has a whole number of remarkable statements in there. One of the key Bible prophecies that has been guiding what we've talked about for the last few years has come from 2 Kings 14 and verse 26, where the book of Amos, a prophetic book, talks a lot about a King Jeroboam II. This is telling us there is going to be a modern-day type of King Jeroboam II. And 2 Kings 14 tells us more about his reign, and he talks about there being no helper for Israel. And that phrase, no helper for Israel, has been a key phrase for understanding Bible prophecy. And Mr. Flurry, Israel and Bible prophecy refers to Britain and America. And Mr. Flurry writes, these verses are prophecy of a time where there'll be no one to help these nations. People are creating and aggravating divisions within America and Britain regarding race, class, politics, and anything else they can think of. Now they're sowing divisions between these two nations. Splitting America and Britain apart from one another means they cannot help each other. He goes on to write, the division developing between our nations is a deadly weakness. It's a weakness the radical left and especially Barack Obama have spent years creating and exploiting. And that's what you saw this week. You know, everything was lined up to have the showcase of unity. And it was the radical left Biden administration that very deliberately just stuck a leg out and tripped it all up the day before it all happened. So, you know, there are other prophecies that it ties in. We've been talking about and forecasting, you know, this breaking of the bands of brotherhood between Britain and America for a long time. But in that article, Mr. Flurry also just draws attention to how this is an important part of some of the latest Bible prophecies that we've been understanding and that informs so much of what we talk about in world news. And well, I'll just read the final, I'll just conclude with the conclusion of that article. It is shameful that we are causing so much division and bringing it upon ourselves. It is going to lead to some dark times for Britain and America. But Bible prophecy also shows that God is letting it happen for a spectacular reason.
Well, thank you for that, Richard. The title of that article, The Real Rift Caused by the Royal Couple, and the relationship between Britain and the United States is just one of these prophetically significant relationships we're looking at. We'll look now at what's happening to the U.S.-Israel relationship, and for this, we'll turn to Brent Nachtigall.
Yes, we've been discussing recently the change of government that's taking place here in Israel. It looks like it's going to go ahead on Sunday with the swearing-in ceremony of Naftali Bennett as prime minister, Netanyahu gone, and then a whole series of parties joining that. While Naftali Bennett is going to lead, we know that he is not necessarily the power broker inside the government. Yair Lapid, a left, well, center-left, he's being called, individual, is going to have the majority of the power. He got the most seats inside this coalition. And then you have some of the more of the usual leftist class. And what Carolyn Glick has done this week with her column, Israeli journalist, is she's looking at what's going to happen, particularly in a response to the relationship with the United States with this government that comes into power. She does this with a couple of ways, and I think it's worthwhile talking about this because it does fall in line with biblical prophecy. First of all, she just shows how different this government is going to be in relation to the way that Israel has grown in strength over the past decade by establishing warm ties with other nations, including Arab states, and then also especially the Eastern Europeans. And she says that these are going to be undermined by this new government, one, because they're Netanyahu's deals, and the incoming government doesn't like Netanyahu, and so they'd like to reverse that. It's pretty petty, but it's in a way it's kind of true. Two is that the diplomatic position that Netanyahu has created with this position of strength and allies in the region is not the main goal of this incoming administration. What you have amongst the government that's coming in is that they believe that Israel is strong when it sides with the United States, that nothing should detract from our relationship with the United States. That's the superpower of the world. So we gain strength, therefore, by being close to the United States, which really does, as we know what the United States has done, it really does showcase that we might see some in the near future, we're going to see Israel take some actions that aren't going to be good in its national interest. Netanyahu, of course, has been willing to stand up to the United States and say that we protect Israel first. And even we have relationships with others in the region that believe in Israel's protection first, and we risk our relationship with the United States if the United States is going to be antagonistic towards the state of Israel. This is not something that Carolyn Glick brings out, that Benny Gantz believes that he's going to be in the next government, as well as Yair Lapid.
Yeah, a couple of points that really stand out from this. We've been talking quite a lot about just how anti-Israel the Biden administration is proving itself to be. You wrote an article about this very thing, that this was something that Benjamin Netanyahu understood very well about the Biden administration, that really distanced him from so many of the other political actors in Israel. There's a certain consensus that they need to defend themselves against Iran, but Netanyahu was really alone in understanding just how dangerous the Biden administration is. And the fact that you have these politicians who are basically willing to trash some of what Netanyahu did, really out of spite for him to pursue this relationship, underscores their naivety about this administration. But the other thing that strikes me is how you really see a similar story to here to what we were just talking about with Richard, that you have maybe just a little bit behind America, but you have an administration coming in that is willing to do things that really are counter to Israel's interests, just out of spite for the leader who preceded them.
Yeah, and I mean, that is going to be a big point going forward, that Netanyahu, his relationship with Trump, this is something that Lapid and others, while they did, obviously, I would say the majority of Israel's politicians were actually kind of in favor of Trump just because he was so outwardly positive for the state of Israel. They did not want Obama. And they want to view Biden, the Biden administration, as something separate from the Obama administration. However, if you just go down the list and you look at the actions, even this week, of the the Biden administration, you can see how anti-Israel they are. Secretary of State was before, was on Capitol Hill answering questions from Republicans and Democrats this week. And he was asked about what's the Biden administration's position on the Golan Heights. Does the United States believe that that's sovereign Israeli territory? Basically, he waffled back and forth and said, well, you know, they have the power there right now. We can't see that changing because Israel, because Syria is still very antagonistic towards Israel. Basically, no, we don't believe it's sovereign territory. It's the status quo. So they've already reverted back from that. Then we have the Iranian issue as well. You had him being drilled about Iran saying, and he was making the case that Iran is pushing towards a bomb. And the deal is the only way we have to stop them from getting towards the bomb, which everyone else is looking at it thinking that, well, this is a horrible idea. Shouldn't we try and figure out another way instead of giving them lots of money to try and trust them that they're not going to develop a nuclear weapon? Then you have the fact that these, the Antony Blinken and also everyone in the Biden administration have been told to not refer to the peace deals that were worked out with Israel and the Gulf states as the Abraham Accords. Don't even bring it up. You're not allowed to refer it to it as the Abraham Accords. They were normalization agreements. They are antagonistic against those deals because, again, they weaken the major policy of the Obama-Biden administration, that being friendship with Iran. Then you have Jerusalem, as we've covered. The Biden administration set to establish a separate Palestinian consulate in Jerusalem, going against U.S. law to do so, the Jerusalem Act. And they're pushing forward with that as well. And you also see that, you know, Lapid and others, they've been very against what Netanyahu has been doing with Eastern European leaders, just developing ties there. And so you see the, if I can put this simply, you have the incoming administration in Israel that views their the prime importance for the security of Israel going forward as a close relationship with the United States. And you have the United States that does not believe in protecting Israel or strengthening Israel in accordance to the deals that have been worked out through Netanyahu and also countering Iran. And so they're going to have to choose, do we continue down this path at supporting the United States with this openly, it's going to get more and more hostile decisions against Israel, or do we jump ship? And in the middle of this, then you have Naftali Bennett, who's meant to be ideologically very close to Netanyahu, further to the right. He's the prime minister, and he's going to have to face the decision, do I blow up the government because of what the majority of the coalition want to do and be in bed with the United States? But if I do that, then we're back to elections. And I don't have any hope of ever being elected again in Israel because I've been proven myself to be a liar in the previous election. And so it's hard to see that as happening. But it's like this government is pushing itself into a very dangerous corner that is going to subjugate security in Israel for a closer relationship with a hostile American administration.
Quite a picture that you just painted there. And what do you expect to happen? I guess it's hard to say, but looking at this from the standpoint of Bible prophecy, where is your focus?
Yes, what I would do is refer, as Richard did, to the latest Trumpet. We have an article in there entitled What Will Happen After Trump Regains Power by Mr. Gerald Flurry. And in this article, while it is mostly about the President Trump coming back to the United States and the need for that, there's also a section in there about the need for President Trump to come back to help the state of Israel. And he says this towards the end. God is wrathful about this, speaking about the changes that are taking place with the relationship between the United States and Israel and the destruction and the increased terrorist attacks and things like that that are seeing. God is wrathful about this. If this continues, it will end very badly. You see how it's important, how important it is that somebody needs to recover something. And he's talking about this prophecy that Richard referred to in 2 Kings chapter 14, that President Trump needs to recover his presidency, not just for the survival of the United States, but also for the survival of the relationship with Israel and also to help get Israel out of the hole that it's going to find itself in if it continues to follow what the Biden administration wants it to do.
what will happen after Trump regains power. Watch for that article from Gerald Fleury. That's we'll link to that in the show notes for today's program. And boy, all of the things that we're talking about on the show today really do point to that article and just the need for a change in leadership in the United States. Thank you very much, Brent. As America withdraws from Afghanistan, this is certain to leave some chaos in its wake. China has considerable investments in that country that could be in jeopardy, and really it has no intention of leaving those unsecured. For this story, we'll go to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, a very interesting development here with Afghanistan. We know that the U.S. is on track right now to pull all of its remaining 3,000 to 3,500 soldiers out of the country by September. So that's, you know, that's just a few months off. And China is now making big plans to move in just as America's leaving. As you said, some of this is motivated by China's fear that the U.S. withdrawal will cause an increase in what it calls the three evils of terrorism, separatism, and religious extremism. China worries that the U.S. exit could increase all of those, and that that will lead to attacks on some of China's Belt and Road infrastructure in Central Asia. China also worries that the chaos could even spill across the border into China itself. So China really wants to be positioned to be able to address those kinds of security concerns. It also wants to be able to just safeguard projects related to the Belt and Road, especially the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor that runs right through that area. So there was a big meeting a few days ago between Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi and the foreign ministers of both Afghanistan and Pakistan. And Wang announced at the end of that that China will be carrying out a major expansion of the Belt and Road Initiative into Afghanistan. And it will specifically be grafting Afghanistan into the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. They may even have to update the name of that. But either way, China isn't wasting any time at all. The U.S. isn't even out yet, and the Chinese are already moving in.
Why is the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor so important to China?
Well, the purpose of the Belt and Road Initiative in general is just to basically bind the world to China. China has been building just vast networks of roads and railways and ports all across Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and Europe in order to do this. And as the name says, there are two different components to it. There's the road, which is actually a maritime road. That's a series of ports that stretch from China's coast to Africa's coast. And then there's the belt, which is land-based. This is highways and railways and energy pipelines mainly. And the belt is actually subdivided into six corridors. One of the main corridors is what you just mentioned there, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. This is a network of road and rail that runs all the way from the China-Pakistan border down to Pakistan's Gwadar port on the Arabian Sea there. So for China, this is just immensely important. It's not just a crossroads where the belt meets the road, but it's also a just invaluable safeguard against one of China's main fears, which is a potential U.S. naval blockade in the South China Sea. So, you know, before China built the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, such a blockade would have posed an existential threat to China. No imports and no exports. But this corridor is largely operational already, and it gives China an alternative route to import all of that energy from the Middle East and to export its goods around the world through Gwadar. So this corridor is hugely important, and now China is grafting Afghanistan into it. So that will mean expanding certain highway and rail systems and also expanding trade and political ties with Afghanistan.
What do you see are the prophetic implications of what China is doing here?
Yes, well, the trumpet watches China's progress with the Belt and Road very carefully, because Bible prophecy in the book of Isaiah, it warns about a mart of nations that will form in modern times, and it'll function as a mighty economic partnership to the detriment of the United States. The scriptures show that this mart of nations will be headed up by China and some other Asian nations and by some European nations. So the Belt and Road, you know, its purpose is to economically connect Europe and Asia. So that's perfectly in line with what we would expect based on those prophecies. And as China pulls more and more countries into it, such as Afghanistan, it helps us see, I think, just how vast and powerful this Mart of Nations alliance will be.
Well, Jeremiah has written an article, China Moving into Afghanistan as U.S. Moves Out. We'll link to that in the show notes, as well as that article about the Great Mart of Nations to better understand the prophecy that he was referring to there. Thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. Now to America's southern border, where the Biden administration's lax policies have encouraged record numbers of illegal immigrants to flood in, and not just from Mexico. For this story, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, the border crisis has getting worse and worse and has been since Joe Biden took office. They just released the new the border crossing statistics yesterday for the month of May and found that Border Patrol agents apprehended or encountered over 180,000 migrants just in the month of May, and that's coming on top of 178,000 the previous month and 173,000 the month before that. And by way of comparison, I think it was well down below 70,000 when Trump was left office. So, I mean, this is just getting just worse by the month. And most of the ones they're apprehending are from either Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, other Central American nations. But the Federalist had a fascinating report this week, and sobering, talking about the county of Valverde County, Texas, saying that a lot of the migrants they're finding there are from places like Haiti, Venezuela, Africa, Uzbekistan. I think they got two from a terror watch list from Yemen that went into California, so that wasn't in Valverde County. But just highlighting that so many of these, they're not just Mexican farmers looking for work. Or even Mexican drug cartel agents, but some of them, they're coming from even the Eastern Hemisphere, places like the former Soviet nations, Central African nations, Middle East terrorist hotbeds, that they want to come to the United States to either traffic contraband or conduct terrorist activities, and have heard that there's a really easy way in right now. If you can just get a plane ticket to Mexico, you can come over with the other 180,000 pouring over each month and have a really good chance of getting inside.
And the officials who are there on the border are absolutely unabashed about pinning the blame on the Biden administration.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's even the president of Mexico came out and publicly stated, like, we all know who's responsible for this. It's Joe Biden's made himself known as the migrant president, and he's been the one talking about how we need to be accepting of all these migrants, and it just encouraged people to come across. And the border agents definitely take the same stance. I've even heard, I don't think he's made it down yet, but I've heard a lot of border agents, they've even invited, they want President Trump to come down and see how bad it is. They're even looking to, like I said, someone who's not even currently in the White House right now for just some sort of help, because, like I said, even Democrats are, some of them, that are starting to realize that this is a national crisis where we've got drug cartels, we've got terrorists, basically anyone who wants just pouring over the border. So fast that there's just overwhelming the border officials there, and the border officials are saying is like, yeah, they just needs some strong federal intervention to secure things, or at least to come out and make a statement to tell people that you're going to be deported. If you start deporting some people and start telling people they are going to be deported, you'd have less come. You found that in the Trump administration, is for as much flack as he got about how unloving and unfeeling he was for saying he was going to deport all these people, it's like not nearly as many people came in the first place because they know it'd be deported. It's similar to what the speak softly and carry a big stick philosophy Theodore Roosevelt used, where he was like, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, who's always accused of being a warmonger, but oddly enough, there were no wars when he was president. Mm-hmm. Because it's, if you tell people, it's like, if you come here, you're going to be deported, and they believe you, they just don't come, and you don't end up having to deport as many.
What does the Bible and Bible prophecy say about what's happening with America's immigration problem right now?
Yeah, there's several verses that we've highlighted on this show before. I mean, there's the probably the one we go to the most often is in Deuteronomy 28, where it's the blessings and cursings chapter, God telling the blessings that will come on the nation of Israel if they obey him, the cursings if they don't. And verse 52 in particular talks about your high and fenced walls coming down as a punishment, so that like people who speak a language you don't understand just like flood inhibited into your country. So it's talking about like a complete lack of border control. But then another one, for one of the articles we can put in the show notes, I wrote this back in April. It's titled Drug Cartels Control America's Southern Border. But towards the end of that, it also mentions an article that was highlighted a lot in the Plain Truth magazine under Herbert W. Armstrong. Yeah, the verse is in Isaiah 5 and verse 5, where God's liking Israel to a hedged vineyard with the hedge on the north and the south and the east and the west. And if you guess anyone who knows anything about hedges, shows that you put the hedge around the vineyard to keep like animals and thieves out. Otherwise, at least in the Middle East where the context was written, foxes will come in and eat all the grapes before people have it. But then this prophecy in Isaiah 5 and verse 5, where God says, I'll tell you what I'll do to my vineyard. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up. And I will break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down. And so that's the prophecy of God basically taking the protections away from the border of his vineyard, which is end time Israel. And so that way terrorists and drug cartel agents or whoever can come in and commit crimes and vandalize property and do other things that's likened to just like eating up the grapes in this vineyard.
I just want to interject that hedges do have a good purpose, but probably not to keep out the foxes from eating the grapes in the Middle East. Probably other vermin or other animals, I'd suspect.
Our Middle East expert thinks there are no foxes in the Middle East.
I'll fact check it later, but we'll let it stand. But we at least we agree that the hedge is there to protect the grapes from
deer eat my garden unless I have a fence around it. So,
deer is slightly different than a fox.
Yeah. Fox is eating grapes. It happens in Aesop's Fables.
It does.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Andrew. Where would you send people who want more information about this?
Yeah, we've got an article and an expanded version that's actually going in the Trumpet that just went to press, I think, this morning. But we've got a web version of it called Joe Biden's Border Catastrophe by our executive editor, Mr. Stephen Fleury, that goes through a lot of these prophecies as well.
All right. Thank you for that, Andrew. You're listening to Trumpet Hour. Coming up, we'll look at the Nord Stream 2 pipeline being ready to start pumping gas and America lifting sanctions on Iran as that nation continues pressing toward nuclear weapons. We'll also look at news of yet another Chinese spy who was working for an American university, and we'll get an update on the election audit taking place in Arizona, how this looks to be just the first of other states' efforts to uncover the truth about what happened in America's 2020 presidential election. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
We have been closely watching this major oil pipeline project between Russia and Germany, a potential game changer in energy politics throughout Europe and Asia. Donald Trump famously stopped it overnight by imposing sanctions. The Biden administration reversed that policy, and now just months into Biden's time in office, the project is ready to start operations. To learn about the implications of this, we'll go back to Richard Palmer.
Yes, this time last week, the Russian President Vladimir Putin announced that the first line of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is finished. He said that once Berlin gives it the go-ahead, the pipeline can start pumping gas within about 10 days' time. I think there's a second line in the pipeline, and that's got about 34 miles left. So on a pipeline from Russia to Germany, you know, 34 miles is not very far to go. I think they're estimating that final part of the pipeline to be done in another couple of weeks. What I thought was fascinating about this, though, was, you know, all along, President Donald Trump and us and many others have been saying, you know, this is more about an economic relationship. This isn't just about the most convenient place to get your gas from. This is about geopolitics. This is about alliances. This is about a relationship between Germany and Russia. This is about Russia gaining the ability to squeeze Eastern Europe. And you just see that the very day that Putin is out there announcing that the pipeline is done. You know, he was giving his speech, and at the same time that he was giving the speech, he just casually mentioned, well, the euro is completely acceptable for us in terms of gas payments. This can be done, of course, and probably should be done. You know, the dollar, the fact that everybody pays for their energy in dollars is a huge factor of what is called the dollar's inordinate privilege. This idea that America can just kind of print almost unlimited amounts of money because everybody uses dollars to buy their oil and gas. So, you know, he's taking a swipe at the dollar as soon as it's done. At the same time, he kind of gives in his speech to Europe and is saying, well, you know, Europe, yeah, we've done this one project. You know, if you're open for more, we're up for that. You're just very publicly, basically inviting Europe into, you know, more than just an economic relationship, not just a customer and a client, but, you know, building on this to form an alliance, exactly the kind of way that we've said that they would do. And right around the same time, he kind of just dropped this little threat to Ukraine, where saying, okay, well, you know, right now, but prior to Nord Stream, Russia would hand Ukraine billions of dollars to pay to use Ukraine's pipeline network, because that was the only way that they could get their oil, their gas to their customers in Central Europe. And this was a major source of revenue for what is not a particularly wealthy country, and a country that's especially short of foreign currency. And Putin says, well, no, yeah, we'll keep paying Ukraine as long as they show us some goodwill. So, you know, now a very thinly veiled threat that, okay, Ukraine, you got to behave yourself. If we don't like what you're doing, we will cut you off from this critical source of revenue. So everything that everybody feared about this pipeline, you're having on display on pretty much the very day that Vladimir Putin is saying, well, we've done the first stage.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk more about the implications of this German-Russian relationship. Briefly, Richard, do you have any thoughts about the implications of America effectively giving the green light to this project?
Well, yeah, it is an interesting one. I think it changes the calculus, I think, for a lot of countries in Central Europe. You know, think Poland, where you're sandwiched between Germany and Russia. And in an ideal world, I think Poland would rely on the United States for their defense. With those two countries, they cannot defend themselves. And they would much rather rely on America than they would Germany. And so you've seen countries like Poland and some of these other Eastern European countries been reluctant to empower Germany, been reluctant to go down and have projects like a common European army and things like that. They want to put their trust in America. When you have America vacillating like this, giving in to Russia, that changes long-term calculations for these countries. They look at that and they say, okay, well, you know, we had President Obama, and he threw us under the bus, and then we had President Biden, and he threw us under the bus. Even if we get an administration in the future that we like, we'll just have another guy that will come in and throw us under the bus. So I think it's something that could easily see some of these Eastern European countries decide, well, actually, we don't really trust Germany, but if we want to keep independent from Russia, we've got to throw in our lot with them, because we can't rely on America for our defense.
Yeah, that's an excellent observation. I'm glad I asked you that question. So just to return to the German-Russian relationship, this is one that we've watched for a long time, and really this pipeline has been one that our editor-in-chief has focused a lot of attention on, particularly in giving us clues to that relationship. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so he had a landmark article really back in August of 2018, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America. And it goes in great detail on this pipeline, on the fact that it wrecks NATO, on just how it ties Russia and Germany together. And he talks about just the importance of this developing alliance. There's a lot in history that tells us to beware of this kind of a relationship, that Russia and Germany, if they want to focus on expanding elsewhere, they usually come to an accommodation. You know, there's a reason why this pipeline in Poland is called the Molotov-Ribbentrop 2 pipeline in some quarters. You know, they were betrayed by this deal between Russia and Germany in World War II. They see themselves being betrayed by another deal between Russia and Germany this next time, or this time around. So it's critical in that respect. Mr. Flory also talked about, you know, this shows you a lot about what Germany thinks of America, that they're willing to side with Putin, that they're choosing Putin over the United States, and that they're, you know, they're empowering Russia. And so he concludes that article talking about some very specific prophecies that say that Germany is going to turn against the United States, that they'll even work with Russia to do so. So this idea that Europe would split from NATO and join with Russia, that is a revolution in geopolitics. I think it's hard to, or it could be easy to not grasp just how big of a deal we're talking about. You know, this is the end of the alliance that won the Cold War. This is a complete change in 70, 80 years of geopolitics. And this is the kind of step and signal that the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is. That's why Mr. Flory's talked so much about it. And that's why it's so prophetically significant, because the Bible forecast exactly that. It talked about Europe turning against America. Herbert W. Armstrong wrote about Europe and Germany turning against America right from the closing days, or just days after World War II ended. And you can see that now happening with this pipeline. And that makes it really critical. It's very important from world events, very important also for just proving and confirming that the Bible's description of world events is happening now.
Read our article, Nord Stream 2 is ready to pump gas to Germany, about this specific event. And it points to, and we will also link to this in our show notes, Gerald Flory's article, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America. Thank you very much, Richard. Iran's nuclear activities are barreling forward. The Biden administration argues that if you want to prevent Iran from getting the bomb, you have to halt economic sanctions on its energy companies. To help us try to discern the logic here, we'll go back to Brent Nachtigall.
Before I get to that, upon further research in the break there, I did do a bit of a fact check on my fact check, and apparently Andrew is correct. Sometimes foxes can disturb the grapes as they bud and eat the little sucklings, and they also dig a lot of holes, which can be a pain for vineyards. So I take it back, Andrew. Good job.
But getting back to these, I won't give you a chance to respond. Getting back to these sanctions here,
that the United States is actually lowering already on the Iranians. Yes, they're about to start up their new round of negotiations. This is the sixth round. I think it starts today or tomorrow in Vienna. And on Thursday, the Treasury Department repealed some sanctions on Iranian officials and also on a couple of energy companies. Now, these aren't huge, massive sanctions, a big release of sanctions. However, and that's what the Biden administration says, that these have absolutely no connections to the ongoing negotiations, nuclear negotiations. This is not a wider easing of sanctions on the oil sector of Iran. That's what the Biden administration is saying. However, it does paint a bad picture. This is what Anthony Ruggiero says. He was a former national security advisor to President Trump. He said, lifting sanctions during negotiations shows weakness to Iran and tells Tehran to continue its nefarious activities, including nuclear extortion, sending conventional arms, etc. And so that's what you have here. You have this situation where the United States is about to sit down across the table from Iran, and as a sweetener to try and get them to see that they're serious, they already start the sanctions coming down on part of their energy infrastructure.
How does this not just embolden Iran all the more at some of the activities that really are concerning a lot of nations right now?
Yeah, you have their rush to the bomb as they're getting a matter of weeks away. Blinken even said that just this week. And then you have number one story right now on Drudge Report talking about how you've got, for the first time ever, warships from the Iranians in the middle of the Atlantic heading towards the Western Hemisphere, and the Biden administration coming out and saying, you know, with a strongly worded statement about that. And yet here they have this situation where they have the ability to maintain maximum pressure on the Iranians, but they let off steam. They show that they're willing to let Iran go in certain elements that are unrelated to the nuclear program as Iran continues to be more and more dangerous towards the United States. I think it's really important that people watch what's going on with these vessels that are heading across the Atlantic and know that the United States, it has options to try and clamp down on the Iranians. And a lot of that would be further sanction, not announce to the Iranians that you're willing to let go of some sanctions as they've done right now. Why is America doing this? That's the big question. It's answered in our editor-in-chief Gerald Flory's article, The Barack Obama Mystery. He talks about why Obama pursued the deal with Iran and why the Biden administration is doing the same thing today.
All right. Thank you for that, Brent. Still reading the Drudge Report. I do want to commend you on your humility, but you got to be careful about second-guessing Mr. Miller, don't you? Well, this past year, the host of efforts by China to spy on America have been exposed. Another high-profile instance emerged this week. For this story, we'll go back to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, on Monday, a former professor from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, appeared in court facing charges that he secretly worked with China while he was receiving grants from the United States government. So his name is Anming Hu. He was born in China, but he'd been working at the university's Department of Aerospace and Biomedical Engineering since 2013. And he conducted some very high-level research there. It was related mostly to the rovers that America has sent to Mars, and also technology for use at the Marshall Space Flight Center. And this was funded by NASA. So that's U.S. tax dollars. And since the beginning of his time at the University of Tennessee, Mr. Hu repeatedly said he was not working for any Chinese organization. That was important because federal law bans NASA from giving federally appropriated money to projects that collaborate with China. You know, if America is shelling out big bucks for all this cutting-edge research, they don't want to see any of the know-how acquired from it going to a nation like China that wants nothing more than to overtake America in science and military and everything else. So, you know, Mr. Hu repeatedly told the university that he was not working with China, but all the while he was. He was working for the Beijing University of Technology during the same time, and he was passing along all of that cutting-edge NASA-funded know-how to the Chinese. And so since Mr. Hu's espionage was funded by U.S. government grants, that means American taxpayers were accelerating China's drive for global dominance.
What does Bible prophecy say about this?
Deuteronomy 28 discusses some specific ways that God would bless Israel if they obeyed him, and specific ways that he would punish Israel if they refused to turn to him. And Israel there refers mainly to the U.S. and Britain. That's something that listeners can prove by ordering a free copy of our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. But if you read through this chapter, you'll see that one specific way God said he would curse Israel is in verse 33, and that says the fruits of the country's labor would be stolen and consumed by an outside power. And that's just what's happening right now. America is rejecting God, and as a result, God is letting the fruits of U.S. labor, so much cutting-edge scientific know-how from our leading universities, he's letting that be systematically stolen and consumed by a foreign power, exactly as he warned he would in this prophecy.
Well, Jeremiah has an article about this latest revelation, Chinese-born scientist on trial on charges he spied for China. Go check that out at thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much, Jeremiah. We'll finish with a look at the audit of America's 2020 presidential election taking place in Arizona and how other states look to follow its example. For this, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, the hand recount in Maricopa County, Arizona is about 80% complete and already coming up with some interesting findings. I mean, they haven't released the numbers of how many ballots for which people yet, but political strategist Boris Epstein has reported that actually about 25% of the ballot boxes there don't even have the number of ballots in them they're supposed to. So that's good news for the recounters, is because the so-called 2.1 million ballot recount might not even have 2.1 million ballots. So presumably they should be able to finish a little sooner if there's fewer ballots to count. But it also shows that there's a good number of fake ballots for somebody. I'll let you figure out which candidate the fake ballots were probably for. But it looks like there's a good chance that that President Trump is the real winner of Maricopa County, Arizona. And since most of the rest of the state voted for Trump anyway, there are ways that there's also a really good chance that he's the winner of the state of Arizona, which would give him a good boost in his actual electoral college vote numbers. And I guess the amount of just kind of like this revelation that, like, said Trump actually really probably really won that state is inspiring some other states to take a closer look at what Arizona's doing. A judge in Georgia has already agreed to allow a recount in Fulton County. There's about 145,000 absentee ballots that would be part of that recount. So
that's in Georgia,
in Fulton County, Georgia. And so that's already in the works. They're getting ready to do that. And the Republican chairman from Nevada, Michael McDonald, actually he toured the Arizona audit facility on June 7th, noting how impressed he was by it. And I think considering doing a similar thing in Nevada. So we may see Arizona-style recounts in Georgia and Nevada, which would be interesting, because if all three of those states found out that Trump was the real winner, then he'd actually only be one state away from, like, being the real national winner of the presidential election. Dr. Peter Navarro, he was an advisor to the Trump campaign, who did a really comprehensive examination of the 2020 presidential election. He found out that Joe Biden allegedly won that election based on victories in only six swing states: Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. But altogether, he only won those states by about 300,000 votes. And then Dr. Navarro went through, absentee ballots and signatures that don't match and glitches in the computer system and found over 3 million votes that looked really suspicious. And so he did this metric where he's like, okay, well, he won by 300,000, but there's 3 million that look suspicious, which means that basically the margin of error on this election is 10 times greater than the margin of victory. And so it's like, yeah, if your victory is pending on only 300,000 votes, but there's 3 million votes that look like you don't know if those are real or not, it means, like I said, you do something like this hand count in Arizona, and I mean, it doesn't actually take much to find out that this election was stolen and tipped to the other side when you start looking at those numbers.
It is an incredibly unusual, unprecedented situation in America history. But our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, said, based on Bible prophecy, that Donald Trump would win that election. And he has insisted ever since Biden has become president that Donald Trump would become president again some way, somehow, and probably sooner than the next election. And we just watch with bated breath how this will play out. It's just really, really remarkable to see this take place. And it's nice to see some people who are willing to stick their necks out to search for the truth in this situation. We do have an article on the website by Andrew, Not Just Arizona, Push to Audit 2020 Election Results Spreads. And you can read that. We'll link to it in the show notes for today's program, and also the latest article that our editor-in-chief has written about what will happen next. The title of that article, What Will Happen After Trump Regains Power. Thank you very much, Andrew. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that's it for today's Trumpet Hour. Email us your thoughts on the program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to our panel, Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal. And thanks to Jeremiah for engineering and production. I'll leave you with the words of Thomas Jefferson. If you want something you've never had, you must be willing to do something you've never done. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
To Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.